Welcome to Eagle Eye View, a podcast series produced by Georgia Southern University. This is our opportunity to show off all the amazing research our students and faculty are doing and the kind of impact that research is having on the surrounding community. My name is Jacob Noderman, and I'm in the communications office for Georgia Southern University. And I have to say, if you haven't been able to tell by my accent, I am not originally from Georgia. I'm actually from the Midwest. I was born and raised in Minnesota and spent the last few years in North Dakota. I've moved around the country throughout my life, and anytime I move, one of the things that I think about the most is wondering how strong or weak my allergies are going to be when I move to that new part of the country. When I was in Minnesota, I would have hay fever laid on in the spring. In North Dakota, I really didn't have that much of an allergic reaction to any season. So while I'm driving down to this beautiful part of the country, Georgia, I'm noticing all the strong forests. I'm noticing all the beautiful colors from the plants that are surrounding me as I'm walking through my neighborhood or walking on campus. And as much as I want to enjoy the beauty of it all, I can only think, man, I just know this is going to come back to haunt me and my allergies. So to help me get a better idea of what to expect and to help you or even a prospective student who's new to the area on what to expect as far as how our noses are going to handle these allergy seasons in this part of the country, I reached out to Alan Harvey. He is a professor within the biology department. He's actually a bit of a pollen expert on campus. So Dr. Harvey, can you explain just first how you got involved in pollen as a research topic?
A number of years ago, a colleague in the art department and I came together and started collaborating on art science projects because we realized we both are observers of the natural world. We just approach it from somewhat different ways. And so we've collaborated on a number of projects. And one of those projects was creating a mural of organisms that students may not be aware of, but that are all around them and are sort of ecologically or environmentally important. Because I was in the middle of allergy attacks, I thought, well, what about pollen? That's even more pervasive. It's all around. It's incredibly diverse. I knew enough about pollen to know that it was spectacularly beautiful, but that unless you have a pretty powerful microscope, you would never be able to appreciate that beauty. I went out and collected pollen from 40 or 50 species of plants on campus, learned how to use a scanning electron microscope to take all of these images, but then the pandemic hit and we couldn't do any of that, and so these actually sat in my office for a year, and then a year ago in February, we snuck in when there was no one around and quickly installed it. But during the course of this 2 years on this project, I've ended up learning quite a bit about pollen. I'm trying to incorporate some of that knowledge into my classes as well as into, you know, this mural and an upcoming museum exhibit on pollen.
Okay, so let's get into the nitty-gritty of the topic. When people think of pollen, allergies are usually the first thing that come to mind. Are there certain types of plants that I need to look out for that will drive my symptoms more than others?
Pretty much any plant that produces flowers will produce pollen. But if you're looking at a plant with nice, pretty flowers, that pollen is not going to be what you're noticing causing your allergies, because that pollen is being transmitted by insects or other pollinators who are specifically being attracted by the pretty flowers. So they produce plenty of pollen, but it's not pollen you would normally ever encounter. So the kind of pollen that you do encounter is from plants that you wouldn't even notice have flowers, like pines and oak trees and maples and birch trees. Those are all wind pollinated, so they don't need pretty flowers. They're not trying to attract anybody. They just have to produce a lot of pollen for the wind to blow around. So it's probably, to answer your question, it's probably going to be those wind pollinated ones. And this time of year, it's going to be pine and oak are going to be the two biggies.
So when should I expect my allergies to first start kicking in? When does pollen season start?
Well, the answer to that change has been changing every year. It normally is, it starts in the early spring and ends in late fall. And again, it's different plants blooming during the course of that year. So this time of year, as I mentioned, is going to be pines and oaks. By the end of the year, it's going to be, well, in the middle of the year, it's going to be more grasses. Towards the end of the year, it's going to be things like ragweed. What scientists have discovered is that every year the pollen season starts earlier and earlier and lasts for longer and longer. So we're already in the middle of the beginning, you know, the early pollen season, and it's early February. Yeah, so that's when I first got here, it was probably early March. So I think we've moved forward an entire month in the last couple decades. So this is where we get into, you know, sort of controversial subjects. The science is pretty reasonable behind it, but basically climate change issues are the main culprit in a couple of ways. First of all, plants produce, their growth is sort of tied to temperature. And so the warmer it gets, the earlier it is in the year that the plant is going to start actively growing and producing pollen. So warmer temperatures are leading to earlier seasonal starts. That's actually the main reason it's starting earlier, because the temperatures are warmer than they were at this time a few decades or 100 years ago. Pollen is produced by some plant or another, like I say, from probably early spring to late fall. Most of that season, there's going to be at least some plant producing wind pollen, wind dispersed pollen that's going to cause allergies. So I would say that traditionally it starts in the early spring and it ends in fairly late fall. The identity of the plants that are releasing pollen into the air varies from 1 month to the next, sometimes from 1 week to the next. And the factors that influence how successful a particular plant is 1 year to the next is going to vary. So other than a general statement that late summer to early fall is probably on average the peak for wind dispersed pollen, I don't think I could get any more specific than that, because it will vary quite a bit from 1 year to the next.
For the past few minutes, we've been talking about the negatives of pollen, mostly because when people think about pollen, they think about their allergies, an inherently negative connotation. But let's try to give pollen a leg to stand on. Why is pollen a good thing?
Well, for the plants that produce it, it's absolutely essential. It's, you know, an essential component of sexual reproduction in plants. Right? So in the absence of pollen, we would lose many, if not virtually all, of the plants around us that we depend upon. So it's fundamentally important to life on Earth that plants are able to continue to reproduce. In terms of its impact to, well, pollinators, I mean, when a bee visits a flower, it is, of course, looking for nectar that the plants produce, but they also are looking for pollen. So it's a food source for a lot of animals as well. As far as for humans, well, of course, yes, it's a source of misery for those of us who suffer from seasonal allergies, but it also has other significance. It also plays a role in some various religious ceremonies of other cultures. It's been used to solve crimes. There's that whole field of forensic pollenology. It's an important tool for paleontologists and for anthropologists, archaeologists who are trying to understand past civilizations. Because pollen is incredibly resilient. It may be small, but it is darn near indestructible. And so these grains, I mean, these are, you would need a pretty powerful microscope to see any of these, but with that tool, you can go down and you can see pollen grains that are hundreds of millions of years old. They will last that long. They're so tough. And so they provide a lot of, they that are a very, pretty valuable tool for paleontologists in their research.
So for a person in your field who's studying pollen, when you see a lot of people sneezing, do you see that as a positive, because that means there's a lot of pollen around? Are you smiling when you see people having bad allergies this time of year?
Because I'm one of these people, it's actually quite ironic that I've become so involved in pollen as a subject of study of interest of mine, because I have had severe pollen allergies, and they're getting worse over time. So the time of year when pollen is most available and I have the most opportunities for going out and collecting it is also the time of year that I'm least enjoying going out and being exposed to it. So I don't have to wrestle with that when I'm listening to other people complain. I have both sides in me just intrinsically. But I have no problem recognizing that that the benefits and the beauty of pollen are more than enough to compensate for the sneezing and the runny nose and the itching eyes.
Okay, so what are some common misconceptions about pollen?
Well, I know one common misperception is something I deal with people that are suffering from allergies, including members of my own family, all right, that also have allergies, and they blame them on, it's this, this flower is blooming now, so this is why I'm allergic to it, and this is why I'm suffering. It's like, no, if you can see the flowers and if the flowers look nice, that is not the cause of your allergies, okay? Because that pollen is not going to be floating around the air for you to be breathing in or to be getting in your eyes. That pollen is going to be riding on the body of a bee or a hummingbird or a butterfly, okay? So a classic example of this happens in the fall when goldenrods, big, beautiful yellow flowers, they start appearing all over, not just this area, but across the country. And they are severely blamed for causing allergies when in fact they are insect pollinated. And the real culprit is ragweed, which is in the same family and it blooms at the same time, but it's wind pollinated and its flowers, you wouldn't even recognize that they are flowers because they are tiny, they are green. I don't even think they have petals, okay? All they are is pollen-producing machines, and they produce pollen that's light and floats, and it is the cause. But since you wouldn't even recognize that plant has flowers, you would never think to blame it, whereas it's easy to blame the beautiful, showy, yellow-flowered plant that's literally growing right next to it.
I moved to Georgia during the winter, probably the best time to move across the country. But when winter turned to spring, my white truck just turned yellow immediately. Every time I would come out from the office, my truck would be covered in that yellow pollen. What advice can you give people who might be new to the region, or even people like me, on how to deal with this much pollen during the springtime?
So this time of year, your car is going to be coated with yellow pollen, okay? There's also a time of year that people they start noticing their allergies. And the pollen that coats your car is from pine trees. And they are not major sources. They're not really sources of allergies at all, even though they are wind pollinated. They're kind of the exception that proves the rule. So dealing with pine pollen is simply a matter of hosing off your car and, hosing off your furniture and covering your furniture so it doesn't, your outdoor furniture, so it doesn't get coated with this yellow annoying pine pollen layer. For allergies, I'm reluctant to do it because I'm kind of needle phobic, that getting allergy shots for the number of years that's necessary for it to kick in is kind of an effective approach. It's a real commitment. You have to keep doing it every week until it kicks in, but it works for the majority of people. One thing that I'm going to try myself is, I don't have it with me, is wearing a mask You know, we're wearing, you know, the masks that are potent enough or are fine enough to filter out the COVID virus certainly are going to be fine enough to filter out pollen grain. So this is a very small pollen grain right here. And I was thinking maybe we should include COVID on the mural, but it's like, okay, it's not pollen. COVID is much smaller than even the smallest pollen grain. So the mask that you could use a medical grade mask and it should take out the pollen. And there are actually some research showing that that's actually the case, that those masks, like them or hate them, they will filter out pollen pretty effectively as long as you're wearing them the right way.
So you've done all this research on pollen and you clearly have a passion for using art as a means of showing off that research. It's my understanding that there is a brand new exhibit in the Georgia Southern Museum specifically about pollen that you've been working on. It's called Pollen Nation. Clever name. Tell me a little bit about how this exhibit got started.
So I teach field biology. I work with animals and plants, so I'm familiar with all the plants in the area. But going around and collecting the pollen samples and then putting them under the scope and in the electron microscope and exploring the diversity and trying to understand why is there so much diversity, and also because I work with insects as well as animals, I'm pretty familiar with the pollinators who come and visit these plants. And I just started thinking, there's a really fascinating story here. It's a complicated story involving plants acting in their own selfish interest, but coming up with a variety of ways. How do you, as a plant, how do you deal with the fact that you still need to reproduce, right? But you're literally rooted to the spot, right? So you may have a prospective mate to share your pollen or to share your gametes with, but you literally can't get to them even if they're 3 feet away from you. So how do they deal with that? And they deal with that through producing pollen and then finding these other organisms outside themselves, pollinators, or other non-living things like wind, water, to move the pollen around for them. And that sets up all of these really interesting interactions, because how are they going to persuade the animal to come and visit them and collect that pollen? Well, they've got to give them something in return, right? And so that's where nectar comes into play. But then how do you set it up so that, as a plant, so that the insect comes to you and other members of your species and not other species? Because you don't really want them to mix, you know, you don't want the pollen of 150 other species dumped on you. Right, you want yours. So you have to find ways of refining it so that only the right kind of pollinators visit you. And at the animal side, right, they have all of their own selfish interests that they're operating on, right? And so there's all kinds of strategies on the animal side of this. And then you have cheaters and you have thieves and you have con artists trying to trick each other to get the benefit that the other one offers without giving them anything in return. There are just a lot of interesting layers to this basic idea of pollen that you couldn't really show in a mural, but the museum is a perfect place to sort of explore those kinds of ideas and sort of put them all together in one common theme, and that sort of revolves around pollen.
So if people want to check this exhibit out, what should they expect when they're walking around this exhibit?
Well, there'll be a lot of big spectacular images of pollen, of the plants that produce them, of the animals that are involved in this. There's going to be a number of hands-on activities. We decided not to have people see which kinds of pollen they were most allergic to. So it's not going to be quite that interactive, but we do have a lot of activities. It's not simply pictures on the wall. So there will be some sort of game-like activities, but also just some sort of just yeah. I'm gonna figure out how to say that more concisely. I mean, it is going to be a mix. It's going to be a mix of just striking imagery. It's going to be some interactive, interactive sort of games, but also you'll have the opportunity to look at some of the pollen that actually in a microscope, so you can actually see these for real.
Well, Dr. Harvey, thank you very much for taking the time to break down our expectations for pollen and even whittle down that mystery of what's actually causing those allergies. So thank you for talking to us today. And thank you all for listening to this episode. I hope we were able to answer some questions as far as the common misconceptions about pollen and maybe solve the mystery over why some allergy seasons are worse than others. I'm Jacob Noderman with Eagle Eye View. We'll catch you next time.